For Pennsylvania hunters and conservationists, our roots run deep. The episodes we bring to you on the Pennsylvania Game Commission's podcast, Call of the Outdoors, will take a deep dive into exposing the incredible work being done by agency staff and partners, including statewide habitat projects, the science behind wildlife management, and what drives agency decisions. The Pennsylvania Game Commission's mission is twofold: to manage and protect wildlife and their habitats for not only current but future generations, and to promote hunting and trapping in the Keystone State.
Hey, Happy New Year, and welcome to the Pennsylvania Game Commission's podcast, Call of the Outdoors. Today's pretty special. I mean, we're kicking off 2024, and our guests today are our Executive Director, Brian Burhans, and a new face on the podcast, somebody we never see outside of the office without a suit and tie on, Josh Zimmerman, who's our legislative liaison. And we're going to talk about a lot of things, and, you know, again, we're going to recap some stuff that we've talked about in the past, but just how the agency works. And, you know, Josh is here to talk about a lot of the ways that we work downtown with the legislators, which is very important. It's a you know, a huge part of what happens here at the agency. But I'm going to throw it right to Brian, and we're going to talk about the Pennsylvania Game Commission, and we're going to talk about good stuff in 2024 and really who we are.
Well, I'm just glad, you know, being 2024 now and that none of us hardly use checks anymore, I don't have to mess up the date on my checks now for the first 6 months, but that'll be tough. But, you know, when you look at the Pennsylvania Game Commission, you know, or all state wildlife agencies across the country, there's basically two models. The model we are is what's referred to as an independent agency, and that's really where all state wildlife agencies started, and about half of them are still independent agencies. And they were set up that way for a reason, is because the governance structure of the agency as an independent agency, we are governed by 9 board of commissioners. Now, board of commissioners are simply our peers. Now, as hunters, they are our peers who are nominated by the governor. They have to go through an interview process. The governor makes his nomination and heads over to the Senate, and the Senate confirms or doesn't confirm the individual. And a lot of misunderstandings about the commissioners and their role, they are the only policymakers in the Pennsylvania Game Commission. I don't make policy, Josh doesn't make policy, you don't make policy. The Board of Commissioners make policy, whether it's rules and regulations, any of those policy issues. And our job as staff is to implement those policies that are adopted or determined by the Board of Directors. And of course, there's a huge public input opportunities throughout the year. We'll talk about that in a little bit. But I think it's important to understand that these 9 commissioners come from 9 districts throughout Pennsylvania. But commissioners don't represent a district. They actually represent, technically, all citizens of Pennsylvania. But they come from the districts to have that diversity and perception for the different areas throughout the state. So they know the issues and they're talking to the individuals.
When you look at Pennsylvania, too, it's different. We're such a melting pot of different kind of culture.
Yeah, it's Northeast, which I found out in Christmas, all they do is play Christmas music 24 hours a day on the radio, compared to the Northwest, which may be hard to find a radio station.
Are you really is that your favorite kind of music?
Josh,
that's your genre, Christmas?
Josh loves
this time of year.
Oh, okay. You don't listen to Christmas music in August?
No.
Okay.
No.
June, maybe.
But you do decorate your house after the 4th of July, I just found out.
Yeah, and this year, my wife and kids are suggesting the trees stay up all year. So, yeah,
very smart. Yeah. Very smart. So I didn't mean to interrupt you, but I just had to throw that little
I'm kidding, by the way.
So the commissioners, they're unpaid. So they're not paid a salary for the work they do, and it's quite a bit of work they do. And by law, and I'll read it right here, the Board of Commissioners are competent citizens of the Commonwealth who shall be well-informed on the subject of wildlife conservation and restoration. You know, don't have to be experts, but they have to be well-versed and understand about conservation. Now, what's interesting is they don't represent a special interest groups. They basically represent the citizens of Pennsylvania. And it's a very important distinction that they do represent all citizens, because there's many views. You know, we look at the North American model of wildlife conservation, and one of the first tenets, the basics of it is, you know, wildlife is held in the public trust. So wildlife, white-tailed deer, bear, turkey, songbirds, they belong to all the citizens of Pennsylvania. And they have to take in the voices and hear the voices of all citizens of Pennsylvania when they are making their policy decisions.
We have to make decisions for things that can't help themselves.
Exactly.
I mean, they can't talk for themselves. Yep. If we could talk to deer and if we could talk to turkeys like we think we can, We'd be a heck of a lot better off, but we can't.
And it really goes down to our mission statement, is to manage and protect wildlife and their habitats while promoting hunting and trapping for current and future generations. That current and future generations is a very important concept to understand, is that, you know, it's for, as Teddy Roosevelt would say, those in the womb of time who are not yet born. You know, those we have, they have to make decisions now that are going to impact those generations yet to come. And it's a very serious role that they play. Now, I mentioned independent agency. So compared to, say, a super agency, which comes under directly under the governor's control. So the governor would have a secretary, the secretary would oversee the agency, and a lot of that is handled in that. Whereas the Game Commission, although as a Commonwealth agency, we do follow all the directives, you know, the governor provides. You know, we don't, for example, the salaries of our employees are determined either by negotiations with unions or in management cases directed by the Commonwealth. We don't have a say in that. How we do our purchasing, there are some minor differences, technical differences for state, for independent agencies, but nothing really that big. But the governance structure is the important part. And agencies were set up this way originally to make sure, when we look at the seven tenets of the North American model of wildlife conservation, this was the best model, and still to this day is the best model, to make sure that that independence is there. So things like science, social science, and all these other factors come into play in making these decisions.
When you say current and future generations, that's a big word. Yeah. And so many of us get so tied down to today and what we see, not just in why we were just talking, you know, shopping or, you know, Amazon and where we're at today, things change, but future is important. And it's important that all of us, especially sportsmen, that really, I mean, you go out there and you have a bad deer season and you think, well, there's nothing around here, but, you know, that's not the future. That's today. And you might not be in the right spot. There's many caveats. We have to, as sportsmen, work together for a better future. I mean, that's across the country. I heard, you know, our friend, good friend Mike Rex, who is like Kristen, who's like their president of the Ohio Division of Wildlife Board, the other day, he was on a podcast and he said, and I'm quoting and name dropping here, he said Ohio could Division of Wildlife could be handing out free money and we'd still make people mad. And it's just, you know, it's the truth. It's the society we live in, like we talked about a little earlier. And you know, the bottom line is, the more that we can work together, whether it's the hunter, trapper, somebody that loves to watch birds, it doesn't matter what who you are. If you love wildlife, we need to do a better job of working together for the future.
And a lot of that controversy also comes back to the North American model of wildlife conservation. I mentioned that first tenet being that wildlife is in the public trust. In other words, it belongs to all the citizens of Pennsylvania. We are the trustee that is responsible for managing that public trust on behalf of the citizens of Pennsylvania. But why it's so controversial, wildlife management in every state is very controversial, is the fact that different constituent groups, different stakeholders have different desires, needs, wants on the same resource. So right. You have all these competing interests. Well, the commissioners have to pass policy X, and they can't pass policy X for this group and Y for this group and Z for this group. It just doesn't work that way. So, and given that we're a government agency, there's always that skepticism around government. And, you know, I understand all that, but it's really important. Now, when we look at the independence of the agency is really comes down to the governance structure, that the Board of Commissioners, who aren't paid. And there's another important element of an unpaid commissioner that really gives a high degree of authenticity and honesty and transparency, is that they have nothing to gain or lose. So, you know, if they can, they are more able to do the right thing because they, you know, financially can't get hit. They, you know, it's not like they can get taken off the board, but they're not going to get fired and lose their income. So that type of transparency and independence really does, and it's why it served conservation for so many decades, of serving and making policy decisions that are really the best decisions for the wildlife resource and the citizens of the state. You know, are they always on target? No, we're human beings. You know, not every policy is going to be on target, but for the most part, it's served us well. It's kind of like, well, Congress is all messed up and we have all this gridlock, you know, but it does work.
Right.
And gridlock's part of the magic that helps it work. So, you know, it may seem ugly. We look at wildlife policy as kind of like making sausage. What goes in is a little different than it comes out, but that's just the way wildlife policy works.
Well, when you look at, and I'm going back to future and or vision, you know, vision's tough. And you look at like our Wildlife Habitat Management Bureau, they go in and they burn something, or they go in there and do a timber sale, and they're not looking at next year.
Let's clarify, prescribed fire.
Sorry, prescribed fire. Some of these technicalities get me some, but if you think about it, they're not looking at next year. They're not looking at 5 years. They're looking at 30, 40, 50 exactly. years from now yeah. and what our kids or our grandkids, and we're probably not even going to be here when that habitat is, you know, at its pinnacle. Yeah. And vision's hard. And like in your job, Josh, and I want you to talk about what you do downtown. A lot of folks that are consumptive users of the Game Commission that are hunters, trappers, and folks that love wildlife, they don't realize that the what happens down there. When I said, you know, we rarely see you out of a shirt and tie, that's your work uniform because you're down there a lot. And there's a lot of stuff that happens down there behind the scenes kind of on a daily basis. So, you know, just let the viewers know what we have going on down there.
Yeah, I mean, when we're talking about stakeholder groups, right? Brian was talking about how we have a number of stakeholder groups in wildlife, the resource in Pennsylvania is for everyone. We're dealing also with legislators who are elected officials. They represent all of these stakeholder groups. And in some cases, you know, it's individual to individual, right? So you have 203 House of Representative members in Pennsylvania, representing somewhere in the neighborhood of 65,000 constituents. You have 50 senators in Pennsylvania, and they represent close to 250,000 constituents. I mean, these guys are representing a lot of people that have a lot of opinions on what we do, not just hunters, trappers, sportsmen, and women. It's the bird watchers, it's the hikers, it's, you know, so
it's public.
It's the public. It's the citizens of Pennsylvania, right? So you know, part of my responsibility is trying to manage those ideas, those opinions, right? So what I'm doing is going downtown to the Capitol, talking with legislators, and it's not just at the Capitol, it's districts, right. Everything like that, right? So but talking about our issues. You know, what's not only important to us, but the future of the resource.
The mission. The mission
of the agency.
Yeah.
But yeah, so legislation, advocating for or against legislation based on ideas that we may come up with, based on ideas that constituents may come up with. So yeah, I mean, it's a pretty massive balancing act.
Sure.
with what's going on downtown.
Sure. And you know, when you look at the mission and you look at science, and, you know, the information that we try to guide our agency through or you know, wildlife, sometimes that's hard to explain. Because like you said earlier, everybody has their own opinions. And, you know, and I did a little really impromptu survey the past couple of years of friends and family and asked them if they've ever wrote or called or spoke to their legislator on something that they felt strong about, and rarely find anybody that speaks up. And usually the people that speak up are the people that have a problem, people that like the way things go on. And we talked about
that change.
Yeah. And I think by like human nature is if things are going well, you're enjoying it. Like just keep going.
Right.
Like I mean, I'm guilty of it too. Like if things are going well, like I just want to go about my day.
Right.
Like I want to do my job. I want to get home to my family. Like I just want to live my life. Right. It's only when something adversely impacts me that I think about taking action. Mm-hmm. Right. If something upsets me, makes me angry.
Like your haircut last week when you was that adverse?
No, that was
you got it fixed.
I see that. That was midlife crisis.
That was required. No.
I mean, even myself, I admit I've never, you know, reached out to a senator or representative on an issue that was local to me. Most people are.
Yeah, and it's really not until, again, something adversely impacts you that makes you angry, gets you upset, that people are going to reach out and want something done. But by and large, the majority of folks, they don't reach out to their elected officials because they like the way things are going. Right. I mean, and I'm specifically saying with us right. now, like they like the way things are going. Right. So,
and communication is good, even with us. I mean, you know, the more that we hear, not sitting there, you know, I wanted to talk about this just briefly. Like, you know, obviously social media is a big player nowadays. You know, everybody, for the most part, especially the younger generation, they have Facebook and Instagram, and who knows what's next. But, you know, we put a post out there with some great information, like about something that's going on in the agency. And most of the time, somewhere down the line on those comments, it becomes like this fueled a little bit back and forth on personal feelings, which is fine. Everybody's
which may not even be related to the topic that was
it's
posted.
It's never related to the topic. But, you know, I always encourage folks, like, you know, read what we're saying. If we put a press release out, like, there's information in there for people that care, and it's good information. And, you know, it might not be the way that it might, I mean, we all three sitting here are hunters. Sometimes we don't agree with everything that happens, but it's the best for the entire state and the best for wildlife.
Yeah, that's the problem with social media. You know, you're just scrolling down and you're just looking at a couple words at a time.
It becomes Jerry Springer sometimes. Yeah. Well, a lot of times.
Yeah.
I meant to say this earlier. Did you notice that the daylight hours are getting longer?
Yes, and I saw two gobblers strutting yesterday. Okay.
Just make,
right behind
make sure
the office.
Just want to make sure you're in check there. But, you know, we talked about the independents, and Josh, you know, as an independent agency, talk about the committees that are downtown, because we have committees on both sides that, you know, some of them are, you know, like live, eat, breathe, and sleep hunting, just like in fishing, like just like we do. I mean, Representative Maloney is a, you know, an ardent outdoorsman, sure, and, you know, and cares.
There's many of them.
Yeah.
Senator Brewster.
Right.
I could go on and on. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And, you know, They work hard for what they believe in, and those committees are important. So just if you could hit on them, because we're getting ready to go downtown, and it's, you know, the public can tune in when we do our presentation to the House at the end of the month, sure, or next month.
Yeah. Annual reports we do for both committees. And I think maybe it's important to talk about legislative process, right? Okay. So you have two chambers, and this is really kind of going back to like Civics 101 kind of
how
thing.
A bill becomes a law, right. That little guy.
How a bill
can you sing that song? Do you remember that
I
song?
Don't.
Okay.
No, that was far before
I
my
do.
Time.
I'm Emily, do you remember that song?
So you have both chambers, House and Senate. 203 members in the House, 50 in the Senate. Those members are each given committees. In our case, the committee that most impacts us would be the House Game and Fisheries Committee and the Senate Game and Fisheries Committee. Right now, the House committee is made up of 25 members, both Democrat and Republican. And the committee in the Senate is 10, 11 members. I have found far and away that whether or not they are hunters, the members of that committee take an interest in hunting.
Absolutely.
And it's not something that they take lightly, yeah, or our issues, right? So we have a lot of hunters that are still in the legislature. But further than that, we have a lot of people that support hunting and trapping, right, in the legislature. But so these committees are formed, a bill gets introduced, right? An idea pops up. You know, one of the big ones that we talk about a lot and that we hear a lot is Sunday hunting, right? So let's take Sunday hunting, for example. Right now it's Senate Bill 67. It was introduced by Senator Dan Laughlin, avid outdoorsman from Erie. He has this idea that he sends out a co-sponsor memo, asks for support for this idea from his colleagues. They introduce the bill. It gets a number, again, Senate Bill 67. It then gets referred to a committee, in this case, the Senate Game and Fisheries Committee. They're responsible for taking a look at it, deciding if it warrants the attention of the full Senate. If they do, they bring it up for a vote, vote it out, send it to the floor for a full vote in the Senate. And then once the Senate decides it's worthy, then they kick it over to the House and the process repeats itself. Goes to the House Game and Fisheries Committee, the full House floor, and then ultimately to the governor. Now, there's a ton of nuance that can happen throughout that process that, I mean, you could probably do an entire podcast just on those nuances. But from a general Civics 101 perspective, like, that's kind of how the bill goes from beginning to end.
Yeah, and we forget about that. You know, even our folks that tune into our social media, you know, we talk about Sunday hunting or something, and they're like, well, you guys should pat. Like, it's not that easy. I mean, what you just said is in a perfect world, and there's a lot that goes on. And again, it has to be right for the entire population in Pennsylvania. Sure. And it's important that we all remember that. And thank you for that, because it is a refresher, because I remember the little guy going up the steps, you know, and how a bill becomes a law, or, you know.
It can be a quick process. Generally speaking, it's not.
Right.
I mean, generally speaking, the legislative process is a long process because there are so many interests at stake.
Do you remember the date of when we present the annual report to the House Game and Fisheries Committee?
The House annual report this year will be February 5th.
And I encourage folks that are listening to tune in.
Absolutely.
It's live streamed. Yep. Brian gives the annual report of everything, that, you know, looking at 2023 and all the great things that happened. And, you know, and we, when you really look at the big picture, we got a lot done last year.
Yep.
It's crazy. It's hard to believe that hunting season's over. The holidays are winding down. We still have, you know, we're still in flintlock and late archery season, small game right now. And I know you guys are both avid flintlockers. And
that's just a precursor to spring turkey.
Exactly.
Now, it's interesting, too. You know, so you have bills that are really important to the agency and for wildlife management, because one of the things we have to understand is everything we do, the sideboards are set by the legislature. There's nothing we do unless we're authorized by the legislature. So when you look at Title 34, which is what basically directs the agency, from commissioner selection and how that process works to even what the agency is responsible for, there's 13 items in Title 34 that specifically direct the agency to do certain things. And they're pretty common sense things, like, you know, set seasons and bags, open and close seasons, determine season start. But the one that's sometimes cited incorrectly is the last one, number 13, which is to serve the interests of sportsmen by preserving and promoting our special heritage of recreational hunting and fur taking by providing adequate opportunity to hunt and trap wildlife resources to this Commonwealth. So that number 13 is, you know, one of the ones that's cited the most, but often parts of it are only used. And it's a really important part that the agency, that's why it's in our hunting and trapping is in our mission statement. That is directed by the legislature that we shall do this. The legislative process is, you know, it's very fascinating, but it's very impactful as far as whether the bills that are passed or how they direct the agency to do the work, because we operate only within those white lines on the side of the road that are established by the legislature.
Right. Boil everything down. We're pretty damn lucky to live in Pennsylvania if you love wildlife. I mean, when you think about it, you know, obviously we see things that are going on all over the country and other states, and, you know, you get out to like some of the Northwest and stuff, like, it's a different world. You know, our culture here for wildlife is tremendous. It doesn't matter. We could be anywhere in the country at a trade show or what have you, and when you say you're from Pennsylvania, people's eyes light up. And sometimes we take that for granted. When we live here,
it's a much different culture, because, you know, I was born and raised in Pennsylvania, but I've spent a lot of my career throughout the southeastern United States, and every state's different.
Sure.
But none of them have such, maybe Michigan, Wisconsin could be a little bit close, but we have a very strong culture of hunting and trapping, and the trapping culture is not very strong in many states. Here right. in Pennsylvania, it really is. So it's a special place.
You look at some states, trapping is in jeopardy.
Yeah.
You know, and it's not because of anything more than, you know, there's roughly 1 million hunters in Pennsylvania. There's 12 million other people that really, you know, they might like wildlife, but don't really care. And they can be persuaded in a lot of different directions. And we're lucky to have that strong 12 million people.
Yeah.
But we're even luckier to have the 12 million other folks that care about wildlife.
Well, we also don't have ballot initiatives in Pennsylvania, like some of the Western states, some of the Northeastern states, a ballot initiative where people can vote on a wildlife policy or any other policy that somebody wants to put forth there. What that often does, though, it just circumvents science
sure.
and social science and how people feel, and it's just a popular vote. Nothing is based on science, so you see that quite a bit. Fortunately, in Pennsylvania, we have a much better process.
When you talk about science, and I've used this word a bunch, but you've taught me this word, anecdotal, and mm-hmm. I'm going to quote Mike Rex again. The other day, he was having a discussion, and it's great to have discussion and debate, and the gentleman was giving him his opinion and kept giving him his opinion about managing his 600 acres. And trying to compare it to managing the entire state of Ohio. And he goes, "Do you know what anecdotal means? Anecdotal means what we see." And that made a lot of sense. I never looked at it that way. Like, I see, like, places where I hunt, and I go, and I'm like, but that's not how it is across the right. entire state. And sometimes we need to think about those big pictures. Even, you know, when we get down to legislation and things like that, something might not make sense to me, but you got to dig a little deeper to see how it makes sense to the entire Commonwealth.
Sure.
The devil's always in the details.
That's exactly right. Let's talk about some good things that 2024
you know, that, that we're here. You know, mm-hmm. it's crazy the older you get how fast these years go. But, you know, there's a lot of great things that happened in 2023. I mean, we've got elk licenses that are going to go on sale February 1st for application. Our very successful elk season, our elk program is just growing strong. But if you have some stuff that we can just kind of tease folks about of what we see 2024 looking like, I mean, obviously winter's not been too bad. So, you know, the wildlife out there's going to come through winter pretty good, it looks like. I mean, we're 2 months, you know, December and not a lot of snow. That's great for what you and I love the most is turkeys, obviously. Yeah. I mean, they're going to thrive.
I'm hoping for another good weather for the spring. Of course, spring weather for turkey reproduction, that's what drives it all. And we've had 3 years of pretty decent hatches and pretty excited about the robust turkey population that we are seeing right now. We got our Board of Commissioners meeting coming up January 26th. So we'll look at the new seasons and bag limits. Don't expect really any huge changes. Pretty stable year. So, you know, another, you know, just another, I mean, every single year just gets better and better. And
well, in that board meeting too, if folks want to like let us know their feelings, they're welcome to come to public comment. I mean, it's open to the public on Saturday morning.
They can also email us.
Right, GM comments. Yeah. And those commissioners look at every one of those comments. Yeah. And, you know, especially when you're nice, they look at those a lot.
And it's interesting about the comments that come through email. It's an automatic system. It's not that a staff gets it and I'll send this to the commissioner, I won't send this. It's all automated.
Yeah, we get it all the time. We get every one of them.
Yep, we get every single one of them and read through, and they're all responded to. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's just a confirmation of, say, hey, thank you for your comment we forwarded to this Board of Commissioners. Because, you know, what is it? Over the last 3 months, we've received over 1,800 comments. So to be able to have handwritten letters of response for 1,800, that's just beyond the capacity of the agency to do that. But we do respond to everyone to confirm that, hey, we saw it and we're considering that. So the hearing from people is very important in the decision-making process. That's the social science part of it.
But Matt, you know, you brought up an interesting point, and I think it bears repeating, like the nice comments, right? And while I think we can all understand that people are passionate about what we do and what they're doing, right? Their recreational opportunities, their hunting and trapping heritage type of thing. I think it's important that to take a step back when drafting emails, and this goes for contacts with legislators also, and maybe more so.
What do you mean?
Like just take a breath. You can absolutely communicate your thoughts in a meaningful, productive manner without necessarily like all caps locks in an email.
The F bomb here and there.
Yeah, or some kind of.
I tape those to my door because they make me laugh. I mean, not that but it's pure, you're right. It's pure passion.
Well, and I think that they're well regarded. Right, because when it's well thought out, when it's delivered in more of a calm manner, it gets more traction. At least it gets more than just a brief glance.
Well, when it's written that way, so you know, we all initially respond by emotion. That's the part of our brain that will always take over. Sure. We make decisions based on the same part of our brain is responsible for our emotions. But
you're
I think
way too deep for me right now.
Well, here's my point is if we just settle down and articulate really what our concerns are in a very pragmatic way, it gives the reader the opportunity to better understand your perspective. And that's the important thing about written comments that come in or whether they're public comments. You know, it's not that you can count them up and say, okay, this is the decision that should be made based on the count. That's not how it works, because most people who write in, call in, contact, are not happy with something.
Sure.
It's just the way it works. We do surveys to look at what our hunter population wants or what our citizen population wants. We have ways to address that in more adequate or ways that are going to give us the data that we need to better inform the Board of Commissioners on those decisions. However, when you give those comments, it gives the Board of Commissioners and staff an opportunity to see from their perspective. And that's the important thing about public comment, is looking at different perspectives and helping the commissioners do that. And, you know, and the role of the commissioner is not an easy role. You look at, again, unpaid individuals.
Volunteer,
going to meetings, maybe meeting with farmers one day, going to a sportsman club the next day. You know, they're going all over trying to talk to people and understand different perspectives. And that's why, you know, this system of the independent agency with the Board of Commissioners as a governance process has served the United States so well in helping us make the best policy decisions possible. And then the result is we have some we're really living the best days of wildlife management right now.
And we're in a time when volunteerism, you know, it's fading. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. I always go back to take what your point and think about my grandma and the golden rule. Yeah. You know, treat others how you want to be treated, because that's how you get to, that's how we get things done. If we're over here screaming and yelling and we're over here screaming and yelling, we're not going to meet in the middle and get whatever it is. That's in life.
That's what my mom and dad taught me. Show respect.
Right. Yep. And when you're raised like in the South where you spent a lot of your life, that respect is a little, I mean, it's a different world down there, but it's yes, sir, no, ma'am.
Yep. And the harshest thing they'll say is bless their heart, which actually can be transcribed in a different way. But it's
kind of the F-bomb. Nice. Yeah. Well, Josh, anything else you'd like to add? Because we appreciate you taking your time out this morning.
No, I appreciate you having me. Yeah. You know, I think that, maybe that's a really important part. You know, even when dealing with legislators, like reach out. Contact your legislators about these issues, about what's important to you on both sides. Whether you're looking for something good or just want to say, hey, I like the way things are going.
Yeah.
You know, like reach out, talk to them.
They listen. These are good people. Like, I mean, everybody wants to blame politicians for everything under the sun.
Yeah.
These people are there to do.
Their job's not easy. Their job's not easy at all.
I wouldn't want to do their job.
No, and they genuinely want to do a good job.
Yeah, they do.
Like they genuinely want to make Pennsylvania better.
Absolutely. So,
but reach out, but do it in a good way. Don't do it in a confrontational manner, because I mean, that doesn't lead to productive relationships. Like this is kind of human nature type of thing.
You should have been, like you taught us a civics lesson this morning. Now you're,
I know.
I don't even know what class that I learned that in, like home ec maybe. Yeah. No, but we appreciate it. And there's a lot that goes on behind the scenes, and that's what Call the Outdoors is. We're exposed a lot of things, and this world's built on networking and communications. And we have to communicate with each other and communicate in a positive way for a better outcome. And the bottom line is, the three of us sitting here, when you really boil everything down, there's one reason that we're here: for wildlife, for conservation, for the future. And when I look at it like that, when every day, like, you know, I've only been at the Game Commission 5 years, and I learn so much every day when I'm behind those walls. And I said this before, like, it would blow your mind. Because I sat out there and threw rocks. I had some memories come up, and I'd pass them on to our social team sometimes. And, you know, one time before I knew, and it wasn't that long ago, you know, 10 years ago, it was a Sunday in turkey season. I'm like, I should be out there hunting this morning. The only thing I can carry is a pocket full of rocks, you know, because I was mad because I couldn't go hunting on Sunday. I just came from other states, and, you know, but I didn't understand how it works. And when you understand, we can just work together to make things happen. You know, whether it's what we believe deep in our heart is right, or that we, you know, can entrust the folks that are professionals that, you know, science is something that like creative folks don't understand, but we know we have to work together to get the best outcome.
In a wildlife policy, we don't always get what we want. In fact, we're never going to get always what we want, because again, different constituencies want different things, and the commissioners have to make a policy decision. And some folks are not going to be appreciative of some of those decisions. It's the way policy works. Whether you're in your legislature changing Title 18 of the Crimes Code or Title 34 or Title 58 in our case, there's going to be people that are unhappy and happy with it. But the intent of the decision makers, whether it's the legislative body making a decision or the game commissioners making, their intent is to do the best job they possibly can. And they really can't do much more than that.
Right. That's all we all can do in life. I mean, it is. Yeah. But, you know, we have a lot of outreach shows coming up. We have the NRA show, the Early Bird Expo. Yep. Our agency and our staff are all over the state this spring and in show season. Come see us. Come talk to us.
Yep.
Bring the sugar, not salt. Right, Josh? Right. But, gentlemen, thank you. Any last words from you guys?
Nah. Appreciate the time.
Heck yeah.
Great discussion.
Yeah. Thank you, everybody out there.
Yeah. Thank you.
Happy New Year.
It is a new year. It is a new year. Good things are going to happen. And
turkeys are strutting.
Well, let's not rush it. The older I get, things go too fast.
Still deer season.
But, you know, thank our folks for joining on Call of the Outdoors. We appreciate each and every one of you. Thanks for tuning in. Let us know, you know, anytime that we can help, or if you have an opinion, you know, that's what we're here for. But we'll see you next time here on Call of the Outdoors with the Pennsylvania Game Commission.